Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we hear from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're thinking strategically about emerging markets. That's the title of a new research piece from the UBS Wealth Management CIO, which aims to take a broader perspective on EMs. Our panel will explain why focusing on the tribulations of EM assets risks ignoring the huge progress that emerging economies have made, as well as the wealth of investment opportunities they offer. We'll ask the panel to focus on China too, as a paragon of both the opportunity and the challenge in the space. And we'll conclude by considering whether it's indeed right that the very way we should think about EM investing in the next 10 years should differ from that of the past decade. We start with Jorge Mariscal, UBS Emerging Markets Chief Investment Officer. Jorge, to start, in your editorial at the top of the piece, you talk about emerging markets assets and you say, look, it's not been a great year. What were you expecting to find? What were you and your colleagues expecting to document with this piece?
We started by trying to think about whether there has been enough change in emerging markets to warrant a different approach going forward. You know, the whole root of the exercise has to do with our strategic asset allocation models. You know, we have two exercises that we perform at CIO. One is what is called tactical asset allocation, which has a time horizon of 6 months. And then we have a strategic asset allocation exercise, which has a 7 to 10 year time horizon. And so we wanted to ask the question, have the changes in emerging markets that we have seen over the last 10, 20 years changed the way we should be thinking about emerging markets in the next 10, 20? And so we proceeded to try to screen out social, economic, market changes, and even as you saw in the paper, some cultural influences. So that was the genesis of the story. You know, we thought anecdotally we had seen plenty of economic change, a lot more clout and economic might of emerging markets as a whole. And so we asked the question, should we be thinking about these markets differently?
Alejo Zavonka is UBS Wealth Management Director of Emerging Markets Investment Strategy in the CIO. Alejo, maybe you two can provide an overview here as the editor-in-chief of the report. What are the big takeaways if we look at the last year, for example?
I think it's important to recognize that the economic, social, and financial market transformation in emerging markets over the last 12 months and more broadly over the last two decades has been truly extraordinary. And that whether you decide to engage into emerging market economies and assets or not, you're increasingly exposed to EM's economic, financial, and political sphere of influence, whether you like it or not. So I think that's a key takeaway. These markets, these countries are becoming too large to ignore.
Well, next, let's drill down into some of the findings. Jorge Mariscal, the report's divided up, as you mentioned earlier.
In terms of the economic and social changes, there are a couple of specific things that I wanted to ask you about. In particular, this sense of a real shift in the sort of power, if you like, for the sort of economic strength, GDP. And I guess, you know, that's changed the profile of a consumer. Does it mean that there's a corollary readjustment in terms of how investors need to look at the EM space?
Yes, most definitely. You know, historically, EM have been looked at as exporting nations and companies that are more linked to the export sector. What has been happening with the elimination of poverty and the creation of a very large middle class is that the domestic markets have become more important. And so we have companies like Alibaba and others in Asia that have become bigger than large companies in terms of revenues like Amazon and others. So the advent of the EM consumer is one of the most clear signs of change that we have in store for the next 5 to 10 years.
What of the need for some kind of recalibration of the received wisdom of investors? Are some widely held views simply a little out of date? Let's consider, for example, that emerging markets are responsible for the majority of global GDP, for example. Alejo Zavonka, is that recalibration still an important step to be taken?
people have a dated view of what emerging markets are and what they represent, a view that is 5 to 10 years out of date, given how fast conditions in emerging markets have changed. So without a doubt, we do see this lag. I think it's natural, but we're trying to help educate spread the word that these countries, these markets, are a lot more developed, advanced than you may think.
Jorge, in the second chapter of the report, it looks in more detail at financial market changes. And again, there's some really striking figures in there. If we look at equity market capitalizations, of course, in particular, we've seen huge growth in the likes of China, multiplying by what, sort of getting on towards 11 times, far, far more rapidly than in the developed world. Again, I just wondered, in terms of the weight of emerging market equities in terms of overall allocation, it's still way under, despite market cap being far higher. Is that something that you think will inevitably sort of correct itself? Is there a bit of an imbalance? And is part of that battle, I guess, to recalibrate investors' expectations almost?
Yes, I think it's striking in the case of equities, but it's also striking in the case of fixed income instruments. Most of the issuance has happened in emerging markets, and the volumes have also increased rapidly, much more rapidly than in the developed world. So at some point, this is going to be reflected in allocations globally. You know, people are, of course, they have a kind of a rear view picture of the emerging markets, where liquidity was always a complaint. You know, when I began my career, emerging markets were defined as the markets from which you cannot emerge in the case of an emergency. There has been great progress in liquidity since then. So I would expect the allocations to emerging markets to increase now. We also made the point in the piece that it should be diversified allocation. Equities happens to be the most volatile asset in emerging markets, but when you combine it with a reasonable amount of fixed income and foreign exchange exposure, then you can balance those risks and get better risk rewards.
One thing that investors remain maybe reticent about is the pace of change when it comes to the modernization of institutions. I wonder, is that a justifiable cause for concern still? Jorge Mariscal, does faster progress in this area lie ahead?
That's a good question. You know, I think part of the reason why people do not allocate more, even though the market caps would justify a greater share for emerging markets, is because there has been slow progress on issues like corruption, rule of law, clarity on the rules of the game. You know, it's not too long ago that China decided to restrain the amount of IPOs when the market was dropping and money was leaving the country. And this sort of manipulation of the rules of the markets and the rules of the game do indeed keep risk high and risk premiums higher than they should normally be. So I think the challenge for emerging markets is this twofold. One is to improve their institutions so that people can take advantage of the opportunities with a little more certainty, and two, to leverage the economic and financial clout that they have to have a greater influence diplomatic and politically on global affairs, which is another area that, in my mind, has not been fully exploited.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look in more detail at that particular emerging market, which Jorge Mariscal was just talking about, the one that's the driver of so much change for investors across the space, whether economic, financial, political, even cultural, China. Let's look now then in greater depth and detail at China. Isabel Hilton is editor of China Dialogue and a regular chronicler of all things related to the country on the Monocle 24 airwaves. Isabel Hilton, China's front and centre when we talk about emerging markets. These countries are now responsible for the majority of the world's GDP. I wonder, are global investors, in your view, Western investors maybe, still, if not in denial about that, a bit slow to act on that new paradigm?
There has been, you know, a huge buy-in in the last 20 or 30 years from Western investors. I think if there's a question mark now, it's over the soundness of the Chinese economy, the big questions around debt and the middle income trap. You know, getting to this point is, if you like, the easy bit. China did it very fast and on a spectacular scale. But of the 100 or so countries that get to middle income status, very few get beyond that. Because what happens is that you price yourself out of the low-end manufacturer and you don't have the thing that's got you this far. And you have some difficulty in getting into the advanced technologies and competing with the advanced economies. And most countries, if you think of Brazil or Argentina or any of the other kind of middle-income countries, most of them don't make it. So the question is, will China? And if it doesn't make it, what will happen in China? And there are a lot of reasons to worry about the state of the Chinese economy, from the aging population to the debt, to the fact that all the engines of growth are exhausted, the building of infrastructure and so on. So I think that in terms of investment now in China, you know, there are those concerns, and then there are the other concerns, which are to do with real access to the Chinese market, because China has been a very mercantilist power, and it's very difficult to invest in China without handing over your intellectual property or without facing non-tariff barriers in the market, which, you know, I think quite a lot of Western firms are now reluctant to do.
Well, Isabel, one thing that investors remain maybe reticent about is the pace of change when it comes to the modernization of institutions in emerging markets. If we look at China, is that a justifiable cause for concern still?
It's justifiable in the sense that you know, data in China is pretty much locked inside a black box. And even companies that are listed on either the Chinese stock exchanges or even on international stock exchanges, you get to a certain point and you just can't discover any more. And there was a famous standoff between the New York Stock Exchange and the Chinese over the regulatory compliance with accounting rules, in which China simply said to international accounting firms, no, you can't look at that. And they then refused to, you know, report to the stock exchange. That kind of thing, I'm afraid, is not diminishing in China. And there have been scandals over companies that listed on the stock exchange and turned out not to have the assets that they claim to have. And then again, you've got the party moving back into the direct control of all sorts of enterprises. And that means that decisions are not made either for, you know, market reasons or for what you would regard as kind of sound commercial reasons. They're made to fulfill, the party state desires. And those are not necessarily good for shareholders.
There seems a sense that EMs are hard to ignore for investors. If we look at, I don't know, maybe FX2, the Chinese yuan is now the eighth most traded currency worldwide, I think. Is there this sense of China being too good to miss out on? A train, Isabel Hilton, one can't afford not to be on.
The difficulty with China is its size. You know, it is very, very big. And so any company, any investor, anyone looking at China has to decide whether the opportunity, which might indeed be limited in time or in scale, is it worth the gamble? Can I afford not to be there? Now, increasingly, you see companies saying, well, actually, I think I can afford not to be there. And particularly since the publication of China 2020, which was China's ambition to move up the technology value chain and dominate advanced technologies. Now, you know, once that becomes a kind of Chinese province, then the advanced economies are saying, well, what is left for us? You know, this isn't fair trading. This isn't a partnership. This is a bid for domination that would continue. So a lot of what you see actually in the Trump trade war is really a battle about who owns the future, who sets the standards, who dominates the markets. And that's becoming quite acute simply because of where China has got to.
Isabel Hilton, editor of China Dialogue. Finally on the programme, let's consider some key takeaways for investors. Alejo Chivonka, we're always interested in looking from the investor viewpoint. How would you sum things up?
This has clearly been a difficult year for emerging markets, but at the same time, valuations across asset classes have corrected. If you have the right investment horizon, a long enough investment horizon, years like this one provide very good entry points into the asset class. So we think this is a great opportunity to rethink your portfolio strategically and reconsider whether you have the right exposure to emerging markets given the opportunity of improved valuations.
And a final takeaway from you, Jorge Mariscal, we talked about changes in the profile of the domestic consumer earlier in the program. What about any other key factors here?
I would also highlight the importance of the technology sector that has now doubled its weight relative to commodities, so no longer emerging markets are tied to commodities. The weight of China, which has become, you know, one-third of the emerging market universe, and obviously a big influence on the rest of Asia. The advent of countries, large countries like Saudi Arabia that are about to be included in the index potentially in the next year or so. And so the way to think about emerging markets going forward is going to be very different. Less commodities, more technology, more Asia, less Latin America and Europe, potentially more importance to the Middle East. So the picture is changing not only quantitatively but also qualitatively.
And that's Jorge Mariscal bringing us to the end of this 211th edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.